it's great to hear from you, Don. I know that you're in Cuba, you're in Havana. Can you get our listeners an understanding of your connection to Havana and the work that people are doing at the hospital, you and your compatriots?
Yes, well, in Australia, I'm the president of the Cuban Children's Hospital Fund, and I took that job on in about 2007 or 8. Anyway, that was founded by Taz Bull and a group of other people, including Meredith Bergman from the ALP in New South Wales and Peter Jennings from AFIDA. And what we do in solidarity with Cuba is directly for the children who are assisted in the cardiopediatric center, which is a hospital with surgery and everything else that goes with that, for the children of Cuba who are born with or later on, usually for genetic reasons, contract some sort of serious or have at birth some serious heart condition like a hole in the heart or something of things of that nature. So we respond to requests for specific assistance, and there's a long list of things that we have been able to deliver by raising the funds, finding a place in some place of the world that can provide the equipment, and then buying it and getting it across the blockade. So we're not a charity. We're an organisation providing practical solidarity in defiance of the United States' illegal blockade or sanctions or embargo that has been in existence against Cuba for 60-plus years.
They asked you to come over, because that's why you're in Cuba. That's why you're in Havana at the moment. They asked you specifically to come because they needed specific things, didn't they?
We needed to review the status of our contributions anyway because of the impact of Trump's escalation of the illegal blockade. But they, as it turned out, they wanted to present me with a very important Cuban award, which is decided upon by the senior organ of government, the Council of Ministers. And that happened about 3 or 4 days ago.
Oh, congratulations. Dr. Salmon, who was going to be on this call, couldn't because he had to go to an emergency, didn't he?
Yes, in the conditions of the United States criminal escalation of the blockade that robs Cuba of trading rights to access what we call petrol and other things, many other materials and equipment that they have purchased in the normal international trade way. Because of that escalation, daily life in Cuba is often made up on the run, and today was a typical one. We were planning a day in which he would do his normal duties. I think he had one surgery or two in the normal planning, and then clinical visits to all the patients and their parents if necessary, and then time with me to talk about various aspects of the relationship and the work we're doing, and also assisting with interviews with two people. It was intended that I'd do an interview with a doctor who has just returned as a member of the Cuban Medical Brigade to Mexico, and also a graduation of open heart surgery successful from 2011. I was going to be talking with him about his experience as a child and how he's going now 16 years later. Then suddenly there was a collapse of the water pressure, and of course he has to be, you know, sort of in the thick of helping and working with the engineers to solve the problem. And simultaneously, a newborn child was found to have serious cardiac problems and needed emergency surgery. We're talking about a newborn child, so if you think in terms of about, at the most, about 30 centimetres long, you can. This is the daily bread and butter for the wonderful Dr. Salmon and his wonderful teams, plural. And so that has disturbed regular planning, and so I sit patiently waiting to hear the news, and having just bumped into another Australian in the garden of the hotel where I'm staying. But that's the story of today, and that is a classic cardiopediatric center day. Essentially, in the cardiopediatric center, there are three main stages of the process. Of course, there is the discovery and the preparation of children for surgery. Then there's the surgery period and the immediate post-surgery care, which is done in a perfectly sterilized but very old facility right next to the operating theatres. Then after that, there is the short to longer term preparation of the patients for the rest of their lives. So, several of whom I have met and enjoyed the company of over my last, what is nearly probably a fortnight now.
So, Don, there's a couple of things there. I mean, doing a little research, you said that Cuba has already bought all these kind of things, medical supplies, that are sitting in ports outside and won't be brought in because of the American illegal embargo. I mean, but they're actually already have bought these items and the world is actually just sitting there with their hands tied because of the Americans.
Yes, that's correct. I've seen various numbers, but there's around, let's say around 10,000, there may be more or there may be a little bit less, 10,000 containers of purchased equipment and supplies, not just medical, but other equipment and so on as well, sitting in containers in various Caribbean ports. And the illegal blockade that Trump has intensified is preventing them from being moved from those ports legitimately into the hands of the Cubans. I think probably there is some aid contributions in there as well. I do not know that for sure, but I suspect that's the case. There is other support coming in from various organisations, but it is mainly in small shipments. And, of course, everyone is visiting Cuba. Who knows anything about Cuba do bring things in their suitcases and so on that are useful and make a difference in daily lives.
Can you tell us what are the most extreme examples of what's going on that causes troubles for people in their daily life because of this embargo from your observation?
Well, let's talk about daily life because it's, you know, rather than just the sort of operation of the hospital and the rescue of babies from, you know, serious heart problems. Yeah, well, I've only been here a fortnight, but I've been heavily exposed to, I think, around four or five different sites where I can see and have conversations with people about daily life. Directly, the most serious problem is the blockade against fuel, because Cuba depends upon that for powering its electricity grid. Now, the sort of opposite to that is the steadily growing installation of solar power and so on. But it is nowhere near yet. It's growing and you can see it. You know, you can see that part of modernity happening in Cuba because they want it. But it's nowhere near being able to solve enough problems for enough people when it comes to energy. Now, that means every household at some part of the day and sometimes for a big part of the day, are without power.
Mm.
And that means that immediately creates problems. The first big problem is water pressure. And then the next thing that flows from that is sleep. It is very difficult for Cubans, particularly those living at a median to middle standard of living, to get good quality sleep if the electricity is down, because that means it's the summer. It's a hot summer.
No air conditioning. Sort of
heat. And so they're restless and so on. So when they wake up to go to work the next day, they haven't had enough sleep. That's pretty well day in and day out. The second thing that flows from that, although I'm pretty sure there is good supply of fresh food, the problem is how to keep
refrigeration. You're talking about refrigeration.
Yeah, talking about refrigeration. And so that really does put enormous strain. Now, in the two working class households where I spent 2 or 3 hours in the middle of just daily life, where I was treated beautifully as a guest, but also I was able to observe neighbours coming and going and kids playing in the street and all of those sorts of things. And these are in two different parts of a middle-sized town. These problems are real. How do they deal with that? Now, this is the other side of the whole story that is not discussed enough. First, the electricity grid workers and the water supply system workers are astonishing. Decades of blockade means they do not have the most up-to-date power supply, water supply systems. In any case, that's been denied to them. Now, with the intensification and the lack of fuel with constant shutdown, then restarting old equipment is more difficult. And yet that's what they do every day. And they are the most dedicated and skilled and creative workforce you could ever possibly imagine. Just wonderful. I just try to imagine what they would bring to a system that is based on modern technology, up-to-date technology in power and water supply. I think, you know, this is Cuba's untapped potential. And this story about the electricity workers day in and day out and the water supply workers day in and day out solving the problems created by the criminal blockade is not being told enough. I think it's an ongoing heroic effort by those workers. So the second part of that is in households, whole households, how they are interacting with the neighbours they know and the ones they don't to solve their experience of the problems.
Yep.
That takes many forms. So I'll give one example. What I have seen, not just in this town, was an increase in bartering. So a family or a household may have a particular useful material need, more than they need. So they will bring that to a friend's place or a neighbour's place where they'll exchange that for something that the others have.
Yep.
Or not even exchange, but just share.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, it's like it's returning to the 18th century, effectively, or pre the 20th century.
Well, no, because when you see film footage of life for Cubans under the dictatorship, the mafia, and the United States corporations that owned the food production system in Cuba before the revolution, it is the most abhorrent images of how people were treated before the revolution.
Yep.
And that is what Trump wants to return to.
Yeah, I know.
That is what Trump and his cronies, with the mafia lurking in the background, want to get back to. They want to get back to Cuba as a place where they can go for entertainment and which they can plunder for its food supply. And now it's burgeoning and wonderful pharmaceutical industry. That's what they want. They want that opportunity to plunder again. So the conditions of life before that, when you see the video footage of life in the suburbs and the countrysides of Cuba before the revolution, no, the way in which adaptation is occurring right now in the suburbs is primarily loaded with solidarity for each other.
So the general public in Cuba, what's the general sense of that you're finding? I mean, because it's a horribly perilous position they're in.
Yes. The first thing to remember in thinking about that question is that Cuba is a developing country in the global south that is developing on the basis of a humanism with socialist characteristics. Most other developing countries that need solidarity and aid have not achieved that. So here there is a struggle not just for material life, but to defend and advance in how the individuals in society relate to each other.
Yep.
So we come to the presence of this special humanism in civil society. That is under pressure. There is no question of it. Probably, this is a rough guess, and I emphasize that. Probably since 2018, the proportion of the population who are very unhappy with the government is up to around 15 to 20%. But only a minority of them want the United States as the solution. The majority, even of those who are unhappy with the government, which I guess is around somewhere between 15 to 20%, which is more than 2018 and two for sure. The majority don't want a military solution or a US puppet. The rest are fighting in struggle in an economic war. They are waging counter warfare with humanist conceived solidarity with each other. That's the majority sentiment.
Hmm. Do they think that they're going to be attacked physically?
I think the view is that that would not come as a surprise to them, but they continue to make life happen every day without being obsessed by it.
Okay.
Well, I'm pretty certain of this because I've discussed it with a few people. They don't discuss it very much with each other. They get on with life, but they also know that it's on the cards. And what is clear is they also know they'll get the worst of it. The people of Cuba will get the worst of it because there will be resistance also. Now, what form that takes is obviously there has to be some sort of planning going on about that, of course.
How does Guantanamo Bay fit into all this?
Guantanamo Bay, it's a portion of Cuba on the southern side of the island towards the east.
Mm.
And it is
an American concentration camp.
It's an American base that has been used in the 21st century as a concentration camp, of course. And there are still political prisoners from Iraq in Guantanamo Bay in appalling conditions. But it is also, has all of the other facilities that an American base has. And it's illegal, and it's been there since Cuba's War of Independence at the beginning of the 20th century. How that fits into anything that might happen of a military character, you can bet there's lots of intelligence technology used from there, as there would be from the American embassy in Havana. You can bet that there are, in fact, probably thousands of State Department, CIA-trained spies in Cuba operating on a daily basis. How that will unfold is, well, I think the general assessment is that it won't go well for the Cubans, but they will fight with, incredible power and dignity for their sovereignty and their homeland.
Because we should come to an end, can you tell us how we can be of any assistance in what you're doing for the hospital that you're connected to? Is there anything that we could be of assistance?
Tragically, there are a long list of places around the world that need solidarity. I'm nervous about saying this, but I think Cuba is at the centre of a massive turning point in what direction does the world go generally? Does the march for barbarism expand dramatically, or are the forces of humanism and socialism able to stop it, to stabilize, and to march onwards themselves? That's the big inflection. That's the big turning point. And Cuba is in the center of that. So first thing, learn, study. Second thing is get familiar with Cuba and its struggles against the blockade and the empire, the most powerful empire in the history of humanity. Then learn about organizations like ours, the Cuban Children's Hospital Fund, and also, importantly, the Australia-Cuba Friendship Societies. These are places where you can make a contribution that is both in words and in practical form with material support. There are wonderful people in every capital city who are doing solidarity work with Cuba, and it takes many forms and there's lots of things you can do. Our organisation is supported by a feeder. We are part of a feeder, the Union Aid Abroad. If you wish to make a money donation, that would be extremely welcome because we have a new project or two in the making. I leave Cuba on Monday, Thursday here, so it's 4 days away.
Oh, too soon. Okay. All right. Wish them well. Wish them well from us.
Yeah, and today I came across a rather delightful knick-knack, and it's a little sort of wristband. Its symbol on it, it shows two rivers intertwined, and I bought it, because it symbolises what the future between Australia and Coolba should be. Australia one river, Coolba another, but we flow into each other, and that's the future. It doesn't exist right now, but it's not far away from being made.